Thursday, February 16th. Good morning, everyone. We're getting started, so thank you for your attention. All of you, of course, know I never really even introduced her this week, Ravineet Dr. Avigal Rock. You can read her bio on the bottom of the flyer, so everybody, I think, knows her at this point. This is day four of learning. We were like dreamers, our return to Zion. It's been fascinating. And I just want to remind everyone, this is generously sponsored anonymously in the schuch of Rachel Delia Bat Elisheva Chaya Devora. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Penny. Well, I'd like to welcome the high school girls. Pleasure to have you here.
We are in the middle of the time period of Shivat Zion. We said there's several phases in the Aliyot to Eretz Yisrael. We completed last class the first Aliyah, Aliyah Zerubbabel. We did chapters 1 through 6 in Sefer Ezra, which describes the first Aliyah. Their mission assignment was to come and build Beit HaMikdash. And then we saw between Perek Vav and Perek Zion in Sefer Ezra, the last verse of Perek Vav, last verse of the 6th chapter and the first verse of the 7th chapter, there's a gap of 60 years. And we don't know what happened during those 60 years. We refer to those years as the black hole years. We don't know what happened. And one of the suggestions we suggested in class here, based on what you'll be used, is that those years were very difficult years in Eretz Yisrael. There's no leadership. The Nevi'ei Shivat Zion, Haggai and Zechariah, probably had died already. When exactly is Malachi is very vague. And those that years where there's really chaos in Eretz Yisrael with the Judean community, which results we're going to see when we get to the second phase of Sefer Ezra. However, there's one event, and these were our closing sentences last class, there's one major event that takes place in that gap, and that is the story of the Megillah. The story of the Megillah is referred to in Sefer Ezra, we saw in Perek Dalet, in half of a pasuk. Because Sefer Ezra is written in Eretz Yisrael, it is describing the community in Eretz Yisrael. Sefer Ezra is not interested what's going on in the diaspora. It only describes things that affect the community in Eretz Yisrael. So the only part of the Megillah that Sefer Ezra describes is in the time of Achashverosh, Uvi Emei Achashverosh, B'chilat Malchuto, in the beginning of his reign, Yichtav Tisna al Yoshevei Yehuda v'Yushalayim. A letter has been written against the Jews of Yerushalayim and Yehuda. The whole story of Megillah is missing. In general, and I discussed it with someone after class, in Eretz Yisrael, they do not, they're not so familiar with the story of Megillah. They don't have media, is not as popular as it is today, and they clearly are not very much aware, but we'll see, there's another thing going on with the story of the Megillah. Accepting the story of the Megillah in Eretz Yisrael was not simple. As it says in the Gemara, in the second Megillah, Esther has to tell them, Tikvuni Ligorosh. Right? She has to ask the Sanhedrin to write it down, to canonize Megillah Esther. In Qumran, where copies of every single book of Sifrei HaTanakh was found, where the Dead Sea Scrolls, there's not a single copy of the story of Megillah Esther. In Eretz Yisrael, they have difficulty accepting the story of the Megillah. It's in the Tanakh. There's a discussion in Masechet Yadayim whether or not it is considered one of the holy scrolls. And what we're going to try to see today is how does that fit in with the whole story of Sefer Ezra, Tufas Shivat Zion. I gave that sheet last week. I don't have extra copies. Some of them were left out here. Just so we can have the historical perspective. Again, I want to repeat again, there is a very big machlokes between Chazal and what we know today based on Greek writings as far as the order of the Persian kings. But Chazal only knew of the kings that were written in Tanakh. They did not know of other kings outside Tanakh, which is why that's one of the reasons for the big machlokes. We're following what is accepted today as the list, which fits in very nicely with the Tanakh. However, Chazal's ideas and messages are still true messages. Whether or not it fits into specific kings, the
small messages of how they understand the story are true messages, and we're going to see how they fit in today. So let's open up to the story of the Megillah. Tell us, Aleph. Page 1,252.
You're holding this?
Megillat Esther, page 1,252. We're not studying the Megillah for the purpose of studying the Megillah. We're studying the Megillah for the purpose of understanding Shivat Zion. Okay?
Chapter 1, verse 1. Vayhi b'yemei Achashverosh.
Who are Achashverosh, Hamorech, Nehodu, Vatkush, Sheva, Be'eshrimu, Me'am, Me'inam?
Yesterday we brought a class of huge maps, and we saw what are the provinces. Medina is not what we mean. When we say Medina today, we mean a state.
A Medina in Tanakh is not a state, it is a province. In Yerushalayim, we have at least three Medinot. We have Medina Yehud. We have the Medina Shomron. We have different Medina. Medina is a province. Now that's three Bashar Medina are provinces. Each one of those provinces has a leader who's called Pasha. A Techa. And that's all we have. Which are plural of the Pasha of Pachos.
So he ruled two Achashverosh, Hamalek, Mehodu, Vatkush, Sheva, Ve'esrim, Ume'ab, Medina. Bayamim Hahem, if you look on your source sheets, it's the year 485 to 465 BCE. That's Sarsi. Bayamim Hahem, Keshevet HaMelech HaChashverosh Akisei Malchuto, Asher B'Shushan Habira. As he's sitting on the throne in Shushan Habira.
Bira is not capital. Bira is capital in modern Hebrew. In biblical Hebrew, Bira, which appears in three books of Tanakh, Bira appears here, Bira appears in Sefer Nechanya, and it appears in Sefer Divrei Hayamin. Bira is the fortress of the palace. That's what the Bira is. Who lives in the Bira? Anybody who has a job in the palace lives in the Bira. The commoners live in the Ha'ir Shushan. When it says Ha'ir Shushan Navoka, the commoners live in the ear. But the people who are connected with the Bira live in the palace.
Bishnat Shalosh Lemalcho, which is year 482. Bishnat Shalosh Lemalcho, Asam Yishtel Lechol Sarav Abadav. Chel Paras Umadai Hapartanin V'Sarei HaMedinot L'Fanav.
In year 482 is after a very long battle with the Greeks. This battle ended actually with a defeat to the Persians, but they still celebrated because that was their way of showing that we weren't really defeated. So he makes a very big party, and he's invited to this party. The warriors and the politicians. This is an important party to show off, so that because he was just got a big blow from the Greeks, but show that he's still in power.
Beharoto et osher kavod malchuto ve'et yekar tiferet gdulato yamin rabin shvamin u'me'at yom.
It's two things that the Persians like doing. Do you have any Persians in class yet? The Persians like fighting in battle, and they drink. They like drinking. Those are two things that are part of the Persian culture, is fighting and drinking. This is a very, very long party. I can't even go to a wedding for 3 hours. This is a party for 180 days. This is a very, very long party, a 6 month long party.
ובמלות הימים האלה, עשה המלך לכל העם הנמצאים בשושן הבירה, למגדול ועד קטון, משתי שבעת ימים בחצר גינת ביתן המלך.
After the 180 days are completed, there's a 1 week celebration for the less important people in the bira. Those people, you don't invite them inside because they might touch the furniture and they might ruin stuff. Those you invite only to the ginah, bachatar ginah bitan hamelech.
Now listen, pasuk vav is a very strange pasuk. Chur karpas uchelet achuz b'chavrei bus. I want you to follow the English or the Hebrew. Ve'amudei shesh, ba'agulir echesef amudei shesh, mitzot zahab, echesef ha'rizbad, bad, v'sheish, v'dar, v'socharet.
Why is this a strange verse, those of you who follow in the English? Because it doesn't say anything.
It says brings all these colors for the festival of colors. Coarse. What is coarse?
White. The Hebrew word chiver is white. When Sar HaMashin says, Al Roshi Shoshat Saleh Chori, so Rashi says, wicker baskets, baskets with holes in them. But even after their brings, Saleh Chori, baskets of white bread, which is what King eats. Chor Chider, white. We have the Ganim V'HaChorim, the white people, which is what's considered the more important people. Here's the color, Chor, Chatat, Chelet, the white, the green, the royal blue, the red, the purple. But we're not told, we're just told the colors. We have pillars of silver, and amudei sheish, mitos zahav, beds of gold, chesef, and a floor made of marble. Vehashkot b'chlei zahav, v'cheilin mikirin shonin, v'yein malchut rav kiyad hamelech, drinking as much as you want, yein malchut rav kiyad hamelech. V'ashpiyach hadas ein ones, kichen yisad hamelech, you can drink as much as you want. No one forces you not to drink. No one forces you as much as you drink. Those who are into wine, but there's sizes of wine bottles. There's a 3-liter wine bottle, there's a 5-liter, there's 15 liters. Does anybody know what the 15-liter wine bottle called? The Nebuchadnezzar bottle. There's the Belshazzar bottle. There's the Shalmaneser bottle. Because these are Persian, Syrian, and Babylonian. Look it up. These are true names, because they're associated with drinking.
Kichen yisad ha-melech ha-kol rav beitel la-sot shirton yish ba-ish. Okay.
That's enough of the thing that we read, and now it's time to analyze each of the things. So many of you are familiar with the famous medrash that when they're drinking, that's the pasuk that we drink, that we sing in the tune of Eicha, and they're drinking from the vessels of Beit HaMikdash. This chazal is based on a story that we mentioned a couple classes ago, and the story of the Feast of Belshazzar in Daniel, Eric A. In the Feast of Belshazzar, we have a drinking party, and there it says explicitly that Belshazzar tastes of the vessels of Beit HaMikdash and drinks of the vessel of Beit HaMikdash. So Chazal is taking the same study there, and says this must have been there. But Chazal, I'm not just taking the same study, Chazal had a very, very clear reading of what's going on in this chapter. You have to see that when you're reading through this chapter, the mind has clear associations to something else. Chayr. Where do you know Chayr from? Chayr appears 39 times in Tanakh, once regarding the Tzitzit, all the other times regarding Chayr Mishkan. Regarding Mishkan. All of these materials that remind us of the Mishkan and the Beit HaMikdash. When we say chelet, agaman, torah, chat, these are things that remind us of the colors of data. If you didn't even know that I was reading from the Gilat Esther, and I was just quoting karpas, chelet, agaman, torah, chat, you would all be thinking immediately of Beit HaMikdash. The Amidim, Beit HaMikdash of Shlomo HaMelech has the two pillars. Has the Yachin Uboaz, those are the two main pillars of the Beit HaMikdash. The structure, Beit HaMikdash has Chatzar Pnimit and Chatzar Chitzonit. The drinking of the wine. What does it say about the drinking of the wine? Here we have just the position. Hasiyah Kadat Ein Onesh in Sefer Vayikra, in Perek Tet, we have a law regarding wine. The Lord of Oshiyayan, right? You can't be sure Shiyayan, you are not allowed to drink before you enter you're not allowed to drink. So we have a drinking law also in Beit HaMikdash. The big day, the Begadim of the Kohen, how are they described? Vashita big day Kodesh le'acharon achicha lechavod u'lechitzadeh. They're described to honor and glory are the big day Shiyayan. What does it say here about the wealth of Ahasuerus? The haroto et osher kavod, the word kavod, the yikar tif aret. So we have the kavod and the tif aret. We have the entire the structure, the similar structure. The laws are supposed to, the dot is a different dot, but it's definitely supposed to
remind us, 180 days, 680 days is from the time they begin the Mishkan until the time they end the Mishkan. Even the 7 days, there's a 7 day, there's an 8 days of Niluim, but the 8th day is when they complete, inaugurating the Mishkan. So we have the 7 days of preparing the Mishkan for its inauguration. And it seems clearly from Pasuk Aleph through Pasuk Ches, and Chazal definitely read it this way, that we're reading a story about Ahasuerus, but the author wrote it in a very clever way, in such a way that our mind should be thinking about Beit HaMikdash. And here this is very clear criticism towards a nation that chose the leader Ahasuerus over Malchus Shamayim in Yerushalayim. They chose this drunk person over the leaders that they could have had in Eretz Yisrael, Zechariah, Haggai. They chose this culture over the culture that they could have had back home. This is very clear criticism of the author here. Written in a clever way, not in a straightforward way, written in a clever way. And even, as I said, according to Chazal, this story took place before there's a Beit Midas. And according to the way we're explaining it here, there is already a Beit Midas, but it doesn't make a difference. The value is the same value, and the criticism is the same criticism. You had a choice, and this is what you had chosen. There's a strange story in the Gemara. Reb Shimon Bar Yochai asked his Talmid, Reb Shimon Bar Yochai's Talmid, asked Reb Shimon Bar Yochai, he said, Rebbe, why did the worst generation of Ahasuerus deserving to be destroyed? Madua nitchavu ato hador kavaya. Reb Shimon Bar Yochai was a very good teacher, so he said, why don't you tell me? You tell me. So someone answered, mitnei shenehenu, they say mitnei sheishtachavu laselem. Because they bowed down to the statue of Nebuchadnezzar. Now that's very strange. Because if you look at this timeline, the story of Nebuchadnezzar takes place almost 100 years ago. The story of Nebuchadnezzar, when they go down to that Nebuchadnezzar, and the statue of Nebuchadnezzar described in Derek Beth and Sefer Daniel, is a story of just 8 days ago. Why is this generation being punished for something that they did 100 years ago? And the answer is, 100 years ago when they bowed down, what could they say in their defense? We had no choice. We were forced to. We had no choice. But now when they did have the choice, and they chose to stay, then in retrospect, we judge their actions. Because if someone is forced to eat trace, and when he has no choice, we don't judge him. But if later on, when he has a choice not to eat it, and he chooses to eat it, then in retrospect, he judges his actions in the past. The same thing here. We didn't judge Am Yisrael for accepting, for bowing down. Bowing down here means accepting the Persian culture. We didn't. Because they had no choice. But when they did have a choice, and they chose to say, then in hindsight, in retrospect, we go back and judge their actions. Yes. Yeah. And here they're being judged. And I want to talk about the Bira. The Bira. The Bira is going to be mentioned a couple times in Tanakh. In Nehemiah and in the book of Ezra, it's referring to Shushan HaBira. But it appears those of you who have a Tanakh, if you open up in Divrei, you know, we won't open up right now, but if you open up in Divrei, Yamim Aleph, Peres Yosef, you'll find there that it is referred to the Beit HaMikdash. Shlomo, David HaMelech, before he died, he has a speech to the people, and he says, Shlomo bni, echad b'chal bo elokim. Shlomo, my son, was chosen by God. And he says, and now it's up to him to build the bira. Ki lo la'adam ha-bira, ki la'ashem ha-bira. Actually, I think it's Divrei Yamim Aleph, Perek Chafet. Yes, Perek Chafet. Ki lo la'adam ha-bira, ki la'ashem ha-bira. And they'll repeat, the bira is a bira that you build for God. So we say the same thing in Pasuk Yotzeh. L'shlomo bni ten levav shalem lishmor mitzvotecha adotecha v'chukecha v'lasot hakol v'livnot habira. The Tanakh uses the word bira because there's only one other bira that we know of in Tanakh. Beit HaMikdash.
And as I it's rebuking Amitra in a very clever way. This is the birah that you've chosen for yourself. This is the drunk leader you've chosen for yourself. These are the values that you've chosen for yourself. Let's continue reading our story. You have to stay. Yes. Maybe we'll get to that. Pasuk Tes. Let's read Pasuk Tes in the Megillah. Gam Vashti Hamalka Vashti Tu Astam Yishten Ashim Beit Hamalchut Asher Lemelech Achashverosh. Vashti Tu, she makes her own celebration, but for the women. Bayom Ashvi Ketov Lev Hamelech Bayayin Amar Limhuman Bistah Chavona Bigtah Vagdah Zaitar Vacharkas Shiv'at HaSarifim HaMeshartim Et Pnei HaMelech HaChashveirosh. On the seventh day, HaChashveirosh tells his servants, what are the title of these servants? HaMeshartim Et Pnei HaMelech HaChashveirosh. In the Persian culture, very few people had access to the king. The king wanted to seem godly. And you remember the movie The Wizard of Oz, that people don't see him? The king wants to seem godly, and therefore, we have regular servants. We have servants who can enter the king's court, but they can't see the king. Those are called hamishartim etnei hamelech. And then we have the highest position. If you look in the highest position, pasuk yedalid. How are they described in pasuk yedalid? These are ro'ei pnei hamelech hayoshvim v'rishonam b'malchut. These are the highest positions. Those are the ones that can actually get to see the king. Those are the highest positions. And Haman, he has, you know, for complete free access to the king. That's really, really high. So these seven servants are summoned to go bring Vashti. For what purpose? Pasuk Yud-Alf, and here you really need to pay attention. Lahavi et Vashti hamalka lifnei hamelech b'cheter malchut. להראות העמים והשרים את יופיה כי טובת מראהי ותמען המלכה ושתי לבוא בדבר המלך אשר ביד הסריסים ויקצוף המלך מאוד וחמתו בערה בו. What does he tell his servants to bring? To bring Vashti in front of him, to show her glory and beauty in front of all the nations. Vashti refuses. And I want to explain this pasuk within the context of Perek Aleph. And I'm using a very nice idea that Rabbi Menachem Mitag brings, and I always like to teach us. I think it's a very true and nice idea. We know in the Megillah, it's written in many different layers, the Megillah. It's written I'll just refer to what Yochevet had mentioned. The Megillah is written during the Persian Empire. And that's one of the reasons why we don't mention God's name in the Megillah. And we don't give God, you can't give God credit in the Megillah. Persians are going to say, what? Your God saved the Jews? It was because of Achashverosh. So we don't, since it's written, the most basic layer of Megillah was written clearly in the Persian Empire. We have lots of translations in the Megillah. Right? They feel poor, who agora. And we have translations because it was written originally in Persian. Chodesh Adar, Chodesh Hashmei Matar. Hadassah is the Hebrew translation of her name, Esther. So we have all these translations because it was written. And one of these translations, because in Persian you don't want to use, it was a censored version. It was a censored version of the Megillah. Also, if you notice, Achashverosh, if I was to ask anyone, is Achashverosh a good guy or a bad guy? So the truth is, the Gemara itself, as we've discussed it, Achashverosh melech tzitzit haya, melech chacham haya, is he fool, is he wise? Because it's not clear in the text. Why is it not clear in the text? Because the author is very clear. It's like a newspaper written in the Soviet Union.
Right.
You have to be very, very careful. How is it written? The author of the Megillah cannot criticize Ahasuerus. Now, Ahasuerus is no less guilty about what happened to the Jews than Haman is. When Haman tells him there's this nation that's good, he just so easily takes off his seal and hands it over to him. Who are these people? Here and there. He's no less guilty. He's really, really no less guilty. So he's going to be criticized throughout the entire Megillah in code, in a way that only the reader. So, for example, when you read the story of Achashverosh removing the seal and giving it to Haman, many of the wordings there remind us of a story. I don't know how many of you are familiar with the story of when Ahab covets his next door neighbor's vineyard. And he doesn't even do about it. And his wife, Jezebel, says, "What are you so depressed and in such a bad mood for? Don't worry, I'll take care of it." And she says that she signs letters in the king's name. The king has a whole long story, we're not going to get into that. And, when he's about to share, it refers to many of those verses of that story. Because in that story, Eliyahu is going to come to Ahab and say, "Habasakta v'gam yarakta." What, you murdered you someone named you inherited? And what should Ahab say? Me? I don't know anything about it. It was my wife. Right? It's not me. It was my wife. What do you want from me? But he doesn't say that because he can't say that. He realizes he is responsible. The Gemara says, and he used many phrases from that story in Perek Dalet. Ahasuerus removing the seal. Could be that Ahasuerus is removing a seal, but it's common that's writing, but Ahasuerus is responsible. Says Bayam, when he says Bayasa Melcha Tabato Vaisna Lehaman Ben Hamdata Ha'adagi Torer HaYehudim, he is a well-known anti-Semite. He should have known. So the characters are not criticized. So many stories you have to really read deeper in, and there's a double meaning. God, we said, was not mentioned, but Chazal already tell us that many times when it will say Hamelech, if it doesn't say Hamelech HaChadveros specifically, it just says Hamelech, it can refer also to Melech Malchei Hamachim. Balayla Ahuna Ve'edash, not Hamelech, on that night, the king cannot sleep. It's not only referring to Ahasuerus, it's referring to God. That was all background to understanding these stories with Vashti, if we were to read it in a different way. If we say Hamelech can be HaKadosh Baruch Hu, let's go back and read this in another reading. Gam Vashti Hamalka Asta Mishte Nashim Beit Hamalchut Asher Lamelech HaChashverosh Vayom Ashvi Ketob Rav Hamelech Bayayin Amar Lumhuman Bistach Habrona Bistach Barakta Zeta Bechakas. I'm reading verse 10. Shibat Tzaritim Meshatim Pnei Hamelech HaChashverosh. Psalm verse 11 is where we're going to start reading it in a double way. Lehaviat Vashti Hamalka Lifnei Hamelech Becheter Malchut. If we say that Pasuk Yud Aleph, we're going to change, because instead of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, instead of the Ahasuerus, the king is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And what does the king want to do? Bring back on yourself, using it as a mashal, reading it as a mashal. Lehaviat Vashti Hamalka Lifanav the Becheter Malchut, for what purpose? La'ar'ot ha'aminech yofiyat, because that's not what I mean. God wants to bring Am Yisrael back home. Am Yisrael should be a light to all nations. Ki nisyon keshtei Torah, v'var Hashem Shalayim, v'nahavu elav amim rabim. Right? Am Yisrael is supposed to be a light for all nations and return home. And what's Am Yisrael's response in Pasuk Yud Bet? V'atema'em ha'malka v'ashti l'vo b'dvar ha'melech v'shem b'yad ha'sarisim. Who are the Sarisim? So the Sarisim would be the servants. Who are the servants? In the Mashal? The Nidian. The Nidiaitim? Fire, the fire. Malachi. Maybe Zubabel. The Shrubbing of the rest. All the Nidiaitim. But to my end, Hamalkav Vashti. And as a response, by itself, Hamelach Me'od, Zrach Hamasov, Zahara, Vos. He says, with this whole story, this Perek Aleph, if I were to ask, before we did all of this, if I were to ask you, where can the story of the Megillah begin with? You really don't need to. The paragraph you really don't need. It would have been enough to start with the king was looking for a bride. But why do we need this whole race? The king, that was enough. Can you start from big time the paragraph? What do we need all paragraphs? The first verses for the king really do not add. More than that, before we started class day, if I were to ask any of you to tell the story of the Megillah, you would not have started with Perek Aleph. People don't even remember that there's a whole description of the party. You would start, you would probably start with, there was a decree against the Jews and Esther was in the palace. You wanted maybe a little bit before that. People don't need to describe this. It's not necessary for the story. But it is necessary for the story because this is the background for the story. This is criticism to Amzel, who chose Malchut, the Persian Empire, over Malchut Shamayim, and throughout they're going to have to learn certain lessons. Now, if this is true, it is very tragic that the end of the story does not end with them all leaving Galut. It is very, very tragic and very, very sad. So we can say one of the messages of the Megillah is, even though they don't deserve it, one of the messages, even though they don't deserve it, even though they betrayed God by not returning, nonetheless, lo me'asim v'lo ge'altim v'chalotam. However, the real ending of the Megillah, and I spoke about this, I think, a year or two ago, is not the end of Perish, is not Perishim. The real story, now here I do have to ask you, those of you who have a Tanakh, open up to Nehemiah Perek Aleph. Nehemiah, it's right after our Ezra. That's the real ending of the story. Those of you who don't have a Tanakh, we'll read it out. Divrei Nehemiah ben Hakraya. Okay, Nehemiah definitely has the most beautiful name in Tanakh. Nehemiah, what does Nehemiah mean? Nechamot. Chachleya, what does Chachleya mean? Achake Leya. Divrei Nehemiah, the man of comfort who awaits God. Divrei Nehemiah ben Chachleya. He's a contemporary of Ezra. Vayihi b'chodesh kislev shnat esrim, the 20th year of Artaxasa. This is 20 years after Ahasuerus. And what do we have? Va'ani hayiti b'shushan habira. Nehemiah has a position. How is that we have Jews with prominent positions? Well, the previous queen was Jewish, was Esther. Maybe that brings more Jews into the king's court. Into the court. And we're not going to read this whole story here, but this whole story ends with Jews are feeling much more connected and identifying with the Jewish community. Nehemiah has a very important job in the palace here. He is the one of the most important jobs. What's the most important job in the palace? The king's butler. The king's butler. The Matzah HaMashiach is considered one of the most trustworthy jobs in the palace. He's the one that always had access, and he's the one that the king had to trust him with his life. That was the classic way of getting rid of kings, was poisoning them. What is it?
This just happened with the North Koreans.
Oh, okay, there you go. And here we see an identified Nehemiah. Here's about what's going on with the Jews in Yerushalayim. And he begs of the king to give him leave of absence and go help. So the real ending, and then this whole community, the story of Nehemiah, which is a beautiful story, is a story of Nehemiah, who leaves everything and goes back to build up the city Yerushalayim. That's the real ending. And Rav Benny Rao, who's the Rav of Beit Knesset Ramban and the Chavya, at Mincha, on Purim, he always leaves Nehemiah. Because that's the real ending of the story. Now, back to our question that we started out with, and we're gonna go back to Ezra. We don't have so much time, so we really have to finish Ezra by tomorrow. Back to the question that we started out with: why is it that in Eretz Yisrael there's not that much reference to the story of the Megillah? Because there's a lot of resentment towards the Jews. If you would have all come in the first place, this would not have happened. Which brings us to the question that I told you we would answer today. As far as yesterday we studied the Nevuot of Haggai. Hold on, let me go back and see quickly. We studied the Nevuot of Haggai and Zechariah last week.
And by chain. Let's do that quickly.
And one of the beautiful Nevuah of Haggai, who says, Gadol yechvod habayit ha'acharon, yechvod habayit ha'rishon, says that this house, this Beit HaMikdash's glory, is going to be greater than the previous Beit HaMikdash. Uvamakom hazeh ten kavod. And we read the Nevuah of Haggai that speaks about this a political earthquake and all nations coming. And we got all these beautiful, beautiful Nebuahs. And we ended off last class with a great question. What happened to these Nebuahs? Why were they not fulfilled?
So as the sheets go along, I'm going to tell you, read a story from Masechet Yoma.
Reish Lakish was swimming in the Jordan. It's when the Jordan still had water.
Asa Rabba Bar Bar Chana. Reish Lakish is an Amora of Eretz Yisrael, and he's swimming in the Yarden. Rabba Bar Bar Chana is a Babylonian Amora.
Okay, now Rabba Bar Bar Chana is one of those Amoraim sages that travels back and forth. He visits his family, he comes to the yeshivas and Eretz Yisrael, he goes back.
Rabba Bar Bar Chana comes. Yahevai Leyada. Rabba Bar Chana wants to shake Reish Lakish's hand.
Haven't seen each other, it's been a while, so he stretches out his hand. Reish Lakish refuses to shake his hand and says, Amale, Elahat Nina Laku. God hates you, Babylonians.
Yechid in Chomahi Nidnala Sivat Kesef, quote of Tatus from Shir Shim, Nindelati Natura Luach Eres. Ima Sitem Asnefen Kechoma. The Alitem Kulchem, the innate Ezra, Ninshalten Kekesef Shein Rekef Shoreshbo.
Because had you all come up like one wall, everyone together, you would have been like silver that does not rust. And you come out now, but you haven't. You did not come up as one wall. And that's why Reish Lakish told Rabba Bar Bar Chana, the reason that the Aliyah was not successful and there was no Hashra'at Shekhinah is because Am Yisrael did not hear the great call. This idea is referred to in the Kuzari. Those of you, we studied Kuzari, I think 3 years ago, we did Kuzari. This idea is repeated by the Kuzari, and I'm quoting it because it's a very important section in the Kuzari. The Kuzari is a, it's probably a fictional story. It's a Jewish philosophy book, which Rabbi Yehuda Halevi writes as a fictional story, a discussion between the king of Kaiser, the king of Kuzar, and a philosopher, a Christian, a Muslim, and a Jew. And he asked, and so it's a beautiful way of bringing about philosophical ideas. It's much more interesting than just writing a boring textbook. He writes it in the form of conversation. So the king of Kuzar, has asked him, since he's davening every day, he's a chazena, einenu, that we should all be, go back to Eretz Yisrael. And I'm going to where it says Aman Chaver. And the king of Kuzar is asking him, how do you explain that you daven 3 times a day, that you want to go back, and he said, you're busy about it, and your father's busy, your great-grandfather, they risked their lives to leave. Yosef wants his bones to go back there. Yaakov doesn't have his bones to even, as soon as he dies, he wants them to be removed and to go back. Moshe Rabbeinu prayed to go there, and what is the Chaver? Chaver is the Yehuda Halevi. What is he answering? Tochachtani Melech Kuzar. Says, you are right, and I'm embarrassed. The Hachet Hazeh, this Chet is what prevented the promises of Bayit Sheni to be fulfilled. This is what prevented the Nevuot of Chagai and Zechariah, the Omro. This is quoting of Zechariah. Rani v'simchi b'Sion. Zechariah tells Am Yisrael, rejoice on Sion. Ki hineni ba v'shachanti b'tochei. Zechariah tells the people, it is time to rejoice because I am coming to dwell amongst you. But God never comes and dwells amongst them. Shehavei tva haya ha'inan ha'elokim nezuhan b'shuva lekev ha'rishona. God is ready and is prepared. Ilu na'anu kulam la'alot b'nefesh chateta. God presents himself to Am Yisrael at the extent that Am Yisrael are willing to accept him. That's what it is. Avam na'anu niksatam, only part of them came. Vinishavu uvam, the majority, and the important people stayed in Babel. Pleased with where we are, with where they are. And here he quotes, and this is going to be the basis later on of the Soloveitchik called Dodi Dosek, famous essay. It's based on this Kuzari section, we'll say. they will think where they are, and this is what Shlomo HaMelech says, I'm in slumber, the delusion is in slumber, and the laziness of Amisrael to hear the great calling. And then he ends, and indeed, the last two lines of the Kuzari, and all our prayers are nothing but sounds of a bird chirping. Mm-hmm. It's completely meaningless. In other editions says, Hovashani Melech Kuzar. Says, I'm embarrassed. I can't even answer you, Melech Kuzar. That's one answer that's brought us. Why did the promises not fulfilled? Which fits in very nicely with what we got in the Megillah here. Another answer that's brought in the Gemara, go back to the beginning, the second section of Masechet Yoma. Kiyasi Lekami to Rabbi Yochanan. They approach Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan is Leishwat, which is Chavrusa. And brother-in-law, Amari, Lav Hainosama, Rabbi Yochanan says, now that's not the reason why there was no Shechina in Bayit Sheni. It's not because they didn't come up to Eretz Yisrael. There's another reason. Inam Yisraelikul Kulhu Bnei Ezra Aloha Beishari Shechina B'Mikdash Sheni. Even if everybody would have come up, there still would not have been Shechina. Why? Here's interesting. Dichtiv, because there's a pasuk that says, Yach Elohim Liyefet Vishkon Ve'ohalei Shem. Afagav the Yach Elohim Liyefet, Shechina only dwells in the house of Shem. What does that mean? Shechina only dwells in the house of Shem. Who's the house of Shem? Shem is Am Yisrael. Beit HaMikdash is not the house of Am Yisrael. So go to the bottom, it's Masechet Midot, the Mishnah. The Mishnah describes the structure of Bayit Sheni, and there were five gates in Bayit Sheni, five entrances. One of them were decorative, two of them were used to come in, one of them to go out. And Shaar Mizrahi, what's the Shaar HaMizrah? What's the measure? This is really the important part, right? Shaar HaMizrah, what does that have? Alav Shushan Habira. Above Shaar HaMizrach, the eastern gate of Har HaBayit, there is a sign that says, this house is sponsored by the Persian Empire, with maybe a flag, the Persian Empire's symbol. So Shaar HaMizrach says, this house is sponsored. And that's why, according to Rabbi Yochanan, there's no Shechina in Bayit Sheni, because it is sponsored by the Persian Empire. The reason we don't say Hallel on Purim is because we're still paying our taxes and we're still enslaved. Akate Abde Akate Ro, they're still paying their taxes. With every sacrifice that they had to sacrifice, they had to add a prayer for the safety of the Persian king and his family. We didn't read that yet in Sefer Ezra. But they had to do that with everything. Let's just read the Rambam. Rambam's commentary to the Mishnah. Kasher Arumi Shushan Habira, when the Jews left Persia, Sival Tam Hamelech Cyrus, Litzayer Surat Il Shushan Bamigdash, he commanded them that they should make an image of the city of Shushan at the entrance to Beit Hamigdash, Kedei Sheyehem Mora Hamelech Aleihem, so that they could always remember who the real king is, not Melech Machayim Lachim, the real king being. That's why they, according to this opinion, is the reason there's no Shechina is not necessarily because of people, but it's because it is sponsored. This is not our house. This is a house that is sponsored by the Persian Empire. Abar Banel later on is one of the Nebuot. He doesn't even refer to this as a Ge'ulah. We really talk about Shivat Yom as a time period of redemption. He says, what kind of redemption is this if we're still enslaved to the Persian Empire? Imagine that. Nonetheless, there are some very good things that happen as a result of the story of the Megillah. And I wanted to go to Perek chapter 9 in the Megillah. Okay. Parashat
You know what? You know what? Let's go to chapter 8, page 1259, verse 10. Chapter 8, verse 10. Okay? This chapter 8 is describing the new letters that are being written. This is also ridiculing the Persian Empire, that the king himself cannot change his own laws. So the Parakhet is describing the letters that Mordechai is going to write in order to overcome the first letters of Haman. Let's read Pasuk Yud. Vayichtov b'shem melech Achashverosh v'atzom b'tabat ha'melech v'yishlach v'im b'yad ha'rasim b'sasim rofei ha'rechesh shachshteranim b'nei ha'rmachim asher natan. Here's the quote of the letter. Asher natan ha'melech ha'yudim asher b'chol ir v'ir lehikahel v'la'amod al nafsham lehashmid l'harog u'la'ber v'chol achel amu medina ha'sarim otam tzat ha'nashim v'shvaram rabot. What is written in the letter? What can the Jews do that they defend themselves? Now that is very, very strange. Because before this letter, were Jews not allowed to defend themselves? It is the most basic right of a human being to defend. It's an instinct. It's not a right, it's an instinct to defend themselves. What's the chiddush of the letter? What's the chiddush of the letter? That a person, up until now, what happened? If a non-Jew on the 13th of Adar would come banging on the door of the Jew, what did the Jew have to open his door and say, I'm here, you name me, Mukhan and Zaman, to fulfill the commandments of the king, come, you may come. It's an instinct to defend a person oneself, if they can. So now, you are allowed to la'amod on the Sham? Up until now, the Jews were not allowed to defend themselves, now that you're allowed to? There's another word that we have to pay attention. Nikhalu. They are allowed to officially create platoons, brigades. They're an official, that was illegal. An organized army under the king, that's illegal. This is why I think it's the time of the Holocaust. True, Jews tried to save themselves as an individual, but we considered great treason if Jews would start an organized training army, arming people, that would be considered illegal. Here, what they're told is Nikalu Hayimdim, what they're given permission is to create an organized army. That takes time. Jews who are in Galut, who don't even know from what end to hold whatever it is that they fought with, the sword. They've been in Galut, they don't know how to defend themselves. The letters have to go out fast, even though the decree is not going to be for another 9 months. It takes 9 months to train an army that have no idea how to fight. This isn't the chayal. These aren't the warriors. These are people who've been living in exile. If Mamasa, you have people coming from the shtetl, and now they're told that they're going to have to organize themselves. And this story that we're reading here is a story that takes place during those last whole years. It takes place in Chutzlaret, in Paras, you have these organized armies all over, and eventually those organized armies that are going to come together with Nehemiah, just like in the first Jewish brigade, became the armies that came and joined Eretz Israel before 1948 and the 1930s, and this is going to be the first army. And this is based on Rav Nathan, who wrote a beautiful article about the first army of Zahal a few years ago. So you can't read the Megillah without the aftermath of the Megillah. And I want to go back to Sefer Ezra. Well, there was enough of a tangent on the Megillah. What we did now, we just filled in the gap of what happens after Zerubbabel, Chagai, Zechariah. In Eretz Israel, nothing's happening. In Persia at that point, there's this major crisis that's going to happen, which is going to affect Eretz Israel. The Jews are, one last sentence about Ezra, and then I'm going to go back to Ezra. The Jews, we said, do not have, aren't accepting this so willingly, this holiday. And that's one of the reasons that when they make the ruling of celebrating Purim, when do we celebrate, what day do we celebrate Purim? 14? Where? And 15? Where do we sell them? Now, we're going according to Choma, where? In Eretz Israel.
We're going to give in Eretz, a special day according to the walled cities of Eretz Israel. It's a way of showing kavod and honor, something unique to Eretz Israel. Something unique to Eretz Israel, and that's why we do it according to the walled city of Eretz Israel, right? It doesn't go according to the walled city of China. I'm not going to say in China that they're going. It goes according to the walled cities in Eretz Israel. It's a way of giving kavod to those who are sitting in Eretz Israel.
But that's enough for Megillat Esther. Now that we can go back to Ezra, Peretz Zion, chapter 7. Finally, after 100 years of Aliyah, from year 539, we're now in year 465.
The time period of Artashasa, you have a timeline sheet. Peretz Zion is after the story of Purim.
Okay. Zion Pasukal.
Dacha hadvarim ha'ele. Chazim ha'ele. Many, many, many years. The Malchut Artashasa. Artashasa is the king that comes after Akashverosh. If you look on those timelines that I gave out last week.
Yesterday.
He had 19 generations. It's going to go all the way up to Ben Aharon HaKohen. The truth is, in Sefer Divrei HaYamim, we have even more generations. Ezra is a direct descendant of Aharon HaKohen. Hu Ezra Alami Babel, Vehu Sofer Mahir B'Torat Moshe. What does that mean? He is a sofer mahir b'torat Moshe. If I were to translate it literally, it would be a very strange translation. It means he manages to copy Sifrei Torah very, very, very quickly. But that's not what it means. Sofer mahir b'torat Moshe, he is a skilled learner. Another, sofer mahir, Ibn Ezra explains, he has the ability of reelli sifrei Torah Moshe. Mahir is not quick, it is skilled. He is one who is skilled in telling over the Torah. Ezra, when we think of the time period of Shiva Zion, the character that comes in our mind is Ezra. Even though they've been returning to Zion for 100 years now. But Ezra is the one that leaves his mark. Ezra is the one that changes, really changes Jewish history, and we'll see next class why. Ezra really changes the way Judaism. To the extent that the Gemara says Ezra is so great, he could have given the Torah to Am Yisrael. And why not? Why didn't he give? Because Moshe came first. That's what the Gemara says. Technicality. This is technicality. But had Moshe not come first, he is concerned. What Moshe did to his generation is what Ezra is doing in his generation. He's creating, Eretz Yisrael is going to be the next Jewish center. And one of the greatest revolutions is knowledge to the masses. Up until now, it was and it takes a Kohen to make this revolution. Because it takes one who is a direct descendant to make this revolution, that people should be knowledgeable. Up until now, people, only the Kohanim, had Kohanim and Levim, had the knowledge of Torah. The masses did not. The main worship of Avodat Hashem surrounded around Beit HaMikdash. He's taking it at Beit HaMikdash is not going to become, he sees the dangers. What happens when Beit HaMikdash becomes the center? There's great corruption amongst Kohanim, and people confuse the Beit HaMikdash. They view that as our worship is in that house. Outside, we can behave in any way we want. They confuse the ends with the means, and his main Kiddush is bringing the Torah out into the streets. In the first Aliyah, it's all around Beit HaMikdash. They're all coming to Beit HaMikdash. They're building the foundation. They're sacrificing. We'll see Ezra together with Nehemiah. A word that repeats itself is Baruchot. It's all the people. It's all in the city. That's going to be one of the great, great teachings. Ezra has some difficult challenges to deal with. Let's read. Who is Ra'alami Babel? Who's Sofer Mahir B'Tzrat Moshe Shem Atan Adonai Elohei Israel? Vayitemlo HaMelech Kiyad Adonai Elohav Alav Kol Pagashato. This is a beautiful pasuk. The phrase Yad HaMelech we read about half an hour ago in the Megillah, the king's hand. It's a way of saying the king's generosity. It's a way of getting in great generosity, you say Yad HaMelech. How does Ezra, you see, the king gives, King Artaxerxes gives Ezra permission to go. But the text does not say he gave, he granted him Yad HaMelech. But what does the text say? Yad Elokav. The text is given, this is what we said, historiography. This is the Tanakh religious interpretation of the event. God extended, the king's arm is nothing but God's extended arm. Kiyad Elokav HaTova Alav, it is nothing but the guy, that's not Yad HaMelech, it might be the king's physical arm, or it might be the king's wealth, but it really it is God's extended arm. Kiyad Elokav HaTova Alav Kol Bakashato Vayalum Ibn Israel. Verse 7. ומן הכהנים והלוויים והמשוררים והשוררים והנתינים על ירושלים בשנת שבע לארתחשסה המלך. When does this Aliyah take place? Year 458 BCE is our second Aliyah. So close to our first Aliyah is 439. Second Aliyah is almost 100 years later with Ezra.
They go, ויבוא ירושלים בחודש החמישי. They enter Yerushalayim in which month? There's great significance in coming, their hands take, coming to Yerushalayim in the month of the destruction is very inspiring for the people. Kishnat Hashemit Lamele, Ki Be'echad L'Chodesh HaVishon, Hu Yisud HaMa'ala MiBavel.
On the first of Nisan, that's when they get together in Babel, that's when the Masa, the travel is going to begin what month? Nisan. And that has great significance. They're going to leave them in a month, and they're going to make sure. And what does it mean? The Echad L'Chodesh HaRishon, they establish the Aliyah, Yisud HaMa'alah. That's when they get together, Yisud HaMa'alah. Later on, the group of Chalutim, Bilui, up north, are going to begin near Emek HaChula, a settlement called Yisud HaMa'alah. If you ever go up north, you'll see these all names are taken from our stories. Yisud HaMa'alah. Not far from Kiryat Shmona, right outside. They have great difficulties in Yisud HaMa'ala there because they have the cholera, because they're near the Emek HaChula. They take their names. The names are taken from here.
Mibavel ubechal lechodesh hashvi ba'al Yerushalayim kiyad Elohav hatovah alav ki Ezra hechin levavo lidrosh et Torat Adonai v'la'asot ulelamed b'Yisrael chok mishpat.
It's the first aliyah. Mission statement is, we are here to build Beit Midrash. The second Aliyah's mission statement is, we are here to teach Torah. We are here to create a revolution. And we'll see in next time many of Ezra's revolutions. We'll continue this next week.
Tomorrow. Tomorrow's break. Tomorrow's not next. That's true.